For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. Another busy week for those working in non-league, with that Tuesday, Saturday pattern a well-worn track for many already. In this past week, I've had the pleasure to meet up at games at my own club with former non-league show stalwarts Dave Anderson, Woody Wordsworth and Stuart Hammonds. And that's not forgetting the ex-guests and ad hoc reporters like Dean Brennan, Matt Gray, Jason Goodliffe, Hakan Hanretten, and a number of others skulking in the crowds as well. Like, I did see you there. It made me realise, though, the strength in depth of this show, of non-league, and also the camaraderie of the non-league world. I've touched and tasted various aspects of the pro game, and to be honest, it was a pretty bitter experience. Non-league is where it's at, and with another international break upon us this weekend, perhaps a perfect time to convince you to drag along another mate, a family member, or even a relative stranger to show them the wonders of non-league. In days gone by, when some less learned folk would chuck abuse about my club's lowlier attendances, I used to tongue-in-cheek refer to us as the cheers bar of the football world, where everybody knows your name. For the youngsters among you, that TV culture reference may well be wasted, but do check out Big Norm and the gang on Apple TV or YouTube. Other streaming platforms are available, of course. So then, a perfect week to celebrate those dedicated to their non-league clubs, showing impeccable loyalty over the years. In our first guest, we have a coach with international experience who admits he was always built to be an assistant but has grabbed the opportunity to be manager in recent weeks with both hands. Three big wins, and it appears Brad Wellman has settled well into the job at Canvey Island, with the FA Trophy first round awaiting them this weekend. For Paul Holloran, it's 12 years since he first took up the manager's role at Leamington, and since then he's led them up, led them down, and back again, and this weekend leads them into the game which sees third of the fourth place battle up at the top of the National North. Running off the show, as ever, is David Richardson. He's back with a non-league paper roundup ahead of another packed edition this weekend. Much to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So to our first guest, and it's time to talk FA Trophy, as it is the first round proper of the competition. Just the 39 ties for the clubs who made it through the last qualifying round, including our next guest. I think that was his second game in the hot seat, and a comprehensive 3-0 win over Burgess Hill. I speak, of course, of the new first team manager at Canvey Island, no stranger to the club, having joined the first team set up in 2013. But he took over the reins in October after the departure of Mark Bentley to Southend United. And it's a warm welcome to manager at Canvey Island, Brad Wellman.
Thanks, Tim. Well, good to be on the show.
Well, it's good to get you on because, you know, I've been aware of you for a long old time. Yeah, 2013, you came in as a coach. You've seen highs and lows at the club. But, you know, you've taken on the role with Canvey Island, flying high in the division once again. You've been an assistant, you've been a coach there for so long. Was management ever on the horizon for you?
No, it wasn't, to be perfectly honest with you. I've always felt that coaching and being a number two was my forte, and something that obviously when I moved back from the States in 2012, I come into Canvey with Danny Hill and was his coach, and sort of worked my way from there, you know, and went up to assistant manager. And obviously when we had the highs and the lows with relegation and then getting to the playoff finals the following year. And then Mark come in and I was happy to work with Mark and spent sort of 2.5-3 years nearly now with Mark. And always happy to be a number two. I just felt I was a great support structure for people. And then out of the blue, Mark's opportunity comes to move to Southend. And you know, we've been fantastic for the last sort of 18 months with our FA Cup one last year. And I sat down with Mark and just felt that, you know, maybe it's the opportunity just to keep things going. You know, we've got a great squad together and the boys have got a togetherness. And we just felt that, you know, by me stepping up and taking on that opportunity, then we'd be able to just keep things moving forward. So, you know, there is always challenges in life. And this one just come at a time where I thought, you know, it was right, and you know, the ironic thing was Mark's always said that when he wants to come to, if he was going to go back into full-time manager, he'd probably go in as a number two. So we always had those conversations. But it just felt the time was right, and I'm excited to be with the boys, you know.
Wait, I mean, you say that you always thought that that support role was always your forte. And, you know, Dave Anderson of this show always says that's probably the most important role within a club is your assistant manager. But, I mean, you've taken on the mantle as first team manager. You said you were already in a good position. You've had a couple of great seasons. You've got a great set of lads around you. But what a start as a manager. Was it?
Unbelievable start. I mean, to be fair, we was going to play Bury away. It's always a tough game for Canvey. I've been there the last sort of five, six seasons, really. And you go there, it's always a tough game. There's always a big crowd there. They're quite a lively crowd. And with us having that unbeaten sort of mantle on our shoulders, I was concerned that going there was my first game in charge. That, you know, it's going to end.
It's
in
a potential
wrong way,
banana skin, and then, isn't it? You're putting yourself up there. Skin.
Yeah, and we sat down before the game as a management team, and we sort of said, you know, this could be difficult. We've got to make sure we do things right as a group, and make sure we defend first, and then look to play there. Given the way we play and the excitement we've got in our team, we know that teams will change certain things to try and combat our strengths as we do with others. And we sat down before the game and said, listen, we'd take a draw before the game. But the ironic thing was, Sammy Knott, who's my assistant, he turned around and said to me, wouldn't surprise me, Brad, if we got out of this with a 3-4-0 win. And then all of a sudden, it just broke out. I mean, it's 5-1 probably flatters us a little bit. We was good on the day, but if you watch the game and the highlights, Bury was still putting us under pressure and probably I think they had better possession stats and things like that. But unbelievable. The boys just stepped up. You know, there was a great day for me to sort of step into Mark's shoes and come out with that result.
Yeah, I mean, they've stepped up, but they haven't stepped back either. I mentioned that, you know, the qualifying round there of the FA Trophy, Burgess Hill were a 3-0 win, and then Witham Town back in the league, a 6-0 victory at home.
Yeah, it was funny because, you know, the one thing that I take from these first three games of me being in charge is more the fact that what excites me most is we've had back-to-back clean sheets, which is something we've not had for a long time. So that was pleasing for me to see that we had that about us as well. As I mentioned before, we've got a real exciting group of boys, talented group of boys going forward. We're always capable of scoring goals. So if we could just sort of shore up the defence a little bit, we felt it was good. So that's the pleasing part for me. But you know, I can't sit here after three games and say 3 games, 14 goals and one conceded. That's what I thought was going to happen. You know, but it just shows the togetherness of the team. And it shows that with Mark stepping away, we were still able to continue and enhance what Mark had started.
Yeah, and you know, overall, it's a great start. You're top of that Isthmian League North. 11 games played, 1-8, drawn 3. Goals for, 36. Yeah, that's an impressive stat. But equally, that goals against, 12. You know, you are flying in all departments in the league. Can you move that on to the trophy with this game against Yaxley this weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I think you know what happens with the cup games. It gives you a nice little distraction to the league. You know, maybe at the moment we're probably not looking at that because we are flying and we've won our last sort of 6 games in the league. But you know, moving to the FA Trophy, it's a realistic chance for us as a team to go and push on and try and get to Wembley. I know it's a cliche, but it's as a non-league team, that's your hope of getting there. Canvey have got there twice before, so history's kind of there. But you know, we had a great FA Cup run last year when we got to the second round of the FA Cup, and that sort of gave us the platform as a team to kick on this year. And we're hoping that, you know, we can get another result on Saturday that will push us again and just see where it takes us. You know, at the moment the confidence is so high that the boys have the confidence going into each game that they can win, and they believe they can win, and they're never defeated. So you know, we're just going to, we take it game by game. We're just going to see where it takes us. But hopefully it gives us a chance with a trophy to get other squad members minutes, which is important to keep all the squad together. And hopefully we can get into the next round.
Yeah, and that trophy win, I remember seeing that one back in 2001. Is there a buzz around the ground? Are there people that remember that are talking about that ahead of this weekend?
Listen, there's definitely a buzz around the ground because it's a big milestone in Canberra's history. You know, probably outside of getting up to the conference, it's probably one of the biggest achievements that the club's had. So people always talk about that. You know, they sometimes talk about the regrets that he was at Villa Park and not at Wembley. Mm. But we just, you know, there is always a buzz in cup football. It brings out the best. You know, you get the fans having their ambitions and thinking, can we move on, etc. So there's definitely a buzz about it at the moment from the fans. But not too much. But then we're only in twice a week, so.
Well, that's the juggle, isn't it? And so, yeah, what do you know about the opposition for Saturday? Because they're in a, you know, well, completely different league, effectively.
Yeah, listen, we've done our homework. We've had a look at them. We've had someone watching for us, so we know what to expect, which gives us a good grounding to sort of prepare the boys. But you know, listen, at the end of the day, like one thing that Mark sort of installed is that when we're going to games, it's about us and how good we can be and what we can do. So when people look at sort of our record and where we're sitting and the number of goals we've scored, etc., a lot of teams come and change us. So we can do all the homework we want, and yet when they come to play us, they might change the way they play. So we just focus on our strengths, and we believe that our strengths are good enough to take us where we need to go.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier on about your experience in the USA, 16 years in Chicago. What did you learn there that you think has been most useful at non-league level?
Not much, really, if I'm being honest, in the sense that it's a completely different game over there. They don't have the structure within the pathway within youth to into the pro game via non-league, because it all goes through the college education system. I was involved with the under 23, so that sort of grounded me quite well with the development phase of football. But to be fair, I picked up a lot of my non-league sort of experience through coming back. When I come back, I was able to working with high-end players. I mean, we had a lot of good players in Chicago that were international players. You know, we had, when we was there in 98, we had Stoichkov play for us, and Brian McBride was there, DeMarcus Beasley. So working with them high-end players has set me well to work with them players. And then when I come back and started working with Danny, Danny was the one that gave me the opportunity to get into non-league, and he really sort of showed me the ropes. So probably got a lot to thank Danny Hill for giving me that opportunity. And then it's like anything, you learn on the job. You know, like you say, I've been there 8 years now, so it's probably nearly 400 games that I've been involved with. So now it's just as you learn and you take different things as you go along, and you just piece it all together and create your own sort of journey.
Yeah, and just like any other majority of other managers within non-league, you've had other roles with other clubs and sort of, you know, consultancies, scouts or that sort of thing, and every moment of a coaching career, you're learning, aren't you? Every day is a learning game, a learning day as a coach as well as a player.
Oh, 100%, 100%. I think in everyday life, you're always learning and trying to pick up different things and see how you can handle different things, you know, whether it's from sort of managing your time, which then you have to think about with the non-league players who have obviously got jobs during the day, you know, creating programs and schemes of work so that it's, okay, can we get to the players here? We've only got them for probably 3 hours a week at the most. So how are you going to manage that? And then when you think about their emotional state when they're coming into training, they may have been up building a house all day, you know, so then they're coming in physically tired. So there's a lot of things you've got to piece together. But at the end of the day, it's all about just creating the right environment for your group of players and connecting with them and making sure that, that they believe in you and they believe in the process that you're putting in front of them. And that proves to be successful, you know, that, that, that Mark sort of created that with me. And now we're sort of like, Mark's moved on and we're able to just continue with that. So.
Yeah. And what about your manager? Management style then, does it, when you're an assistant, that are you the a bit more like the chained up Rottweiler, that you're allowed to sort of bark a lot more, whereas do you have to be a little bit more refined as a manager? I don't know, I've known Mark Bentley for years as a player and as a friend, and he's maybe not one of the most vociferous managers out there. He's a bit more laid back. What's your style?
Pretty fair, very very similar to Mark. You know, I was, when I first come in under Danny Hill was sort of like the, he weren't a chained up Rottweiler, he was probably just a Rottweiler that was on the loose. So kind of like I had to be that one with a central head on, and you know, it's important because it, as number two, a lot of the players want to talk to you. They'll confide things in you. Sometimes there's things they want you to get back to the manager. There might be things they don't want to get back to the manager. So you're kind of like their friend during that time. You know, me and Mark had this relationship where we sort of rubbed off on each other. We worked well together. There was maybe times, you know, I remember walking across the pitch at halftime saying to Mark, I think we need to get into the boys. And then, you know, then Mark sort of says, listen, we can do that. But then you've got to think about them as people, where they're at in their life and their stage of football. And some of these, you know, non-league players might not be able to take that that beating at half-time. And I think football's evolved now, where these players have gone through the academy system. Now, the days of the screaming coach is kind of gone a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the laid-back sort of, not laid-back attitude, I think the competitive attitude that I've got and the way we sort of analyse the performance is important. And when we get them in at half-time and things, we've got 10 minutes to maybe get our point across. If I spend 8 minutes of that screaming and shouting at them, then they're not going to come out and play for us, you know. So I think the style that the laid-back sort of style that Mark had and what he's been able to transfer into me is a big reason behind the success of these boys, because they believe in themselves. They're not playing with a fear of making mistakes, and they're going out and really showcasing how good they can be. And I think that's a testament to the management style that Mark brought in and that I'm hopefully able to bring forward.
Yeah, and it's great to be able to talk to guys like yourself and get that, because from a fan's perspective, it's very easy just to shout and, you know, criticise a player because the ball slipped under his foot or something. He's just miscontrolled it, it's bobbled. And there's a million and one things that may have caused that, or that slight lapse of concentration. And yeah, we'll talk to another manager later who's been in the job at his club for 12 years. And that stability and that knowledge and that working with those players, it's almost more and more non-league clubs should see it as a blueprint. And that's why I think it's great that you've been given the opportunity to follow through what you guys had already created at Canvey Island.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think using the word blueprints a good word, because, you know, there's the stability that it brings. It's all about creating the environment in where people can succeed, you know. And I know from a personal standpoint, you know, if you're in a job all day and you've got your boss coming in and saying to you, you've done that wrong, you've done that wrong, you've done that wrong, in the end, you're going to go, I don't really want to do this job, you know. So when you've got a manager coming in saying that, you can see why players will go, hang on a minute, am I really good enough for him? You know, but when you're heaping praise on players and you're just kind of like, especially some of the youngsters that come in, you know, they might just be on the wrong pathway. So you just got to pick them up, put them on the right path and give them the confidence to go again. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, football is a results-driven business. And at the end of the day, as a manager, if you're able to sort of create that environment, but then you're not getting the results, then, you know, the board don't really look at that and they think, hang on, we've got to change because he's not getting the best out of his players. So I think that the blueprint needs to be driven down from the board of directors down into the team and believe in the manager. And I think that's another reason why we've been successful at Canvey. You know, John Batt is the chairman who believes in the structure. He believes in what Mark wanted to do. Obviously, now Mark's moved on, he believes that I'm the right person to take that forward. So he clearly has that belief in the structure that we've created. And I think that's important, that you get that support from above as well, you know, versus me going into every game thinking, what if this don't go right? What if the chairman's going to have the ump and things like that? But he believes in the process. We're all in it together. We're all pushing in the right direction. So, you know, I think that's important, that the blueprint involves the whole club and not just the management of the team.
And what a push in the right direction you're making of it as well. Brad Wellman, congratulations on the appointment. You know, you've got a few games under your belt, a few wins under your belt, a few goals under your belt, and a couple of clean sheets as well. Wish you well for the rest of the season, and particularly this weekend in the FA Trophy. But thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
No problem. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate your time.
So this week is all about celebrating the loyalty in football, and as our next guest ticks round to, 12 years in his current non-league managerial job, there's surely nobody who knows more about that. He's seen promotion, he's seen relegation, he's seen playoff heartbreak, playoff joy, and he's currently leading his side to a playoff push towards the top tier of non-league from National North. It's a pleasure and an honour to welcome to the Non-League Football Show manager at Leamington FC, Paul Holleran.
Good afternoon.
Paul, it's great to get you on. Now, your club have done a great piece on their website of 12 of the most important games under your guidance, but it all began on the 14th of November 2009 against Cambridge City in the Southern League. Can you remember anything about it?
Yeah, I can. Because I was sort of, I was appointed on sort of the Wednesday night, Thursday morning, whatever it was, and obviously it's one of them scenarios when, you know, the manager leaves and there was a bit of a gap in between. And the previous manager had been there, Jason had been there a number of years and done a good job bringing the club up through the leagues. And basically, we went into a training session on a Thursday night, and like a lot of times, you know, when a club's been sort of left unguarded, sort of one or two had left and blah, blah, blah. And we turned up on a Thursday night and we were playing Cambridge City, who Gary Roberts was the... Was the manager at the time, and they were flying at step three then, and sort of thinking, oh my God, we've got to get a centre half, we've got to get a goalkeeper, and what if this is on Thursday afternoon, evening, like, so we managed to talk a chap called Gary Knight out of retirement. He had gone into semi-retirement. Gary was well known around this area, captain of Gresley, Redditch, Sully Hall, played for me a few times, Hal's having, and managed to do a little deal to bring Tony Breeden to the club, and we managed to get a decent. We actually played 3-5-2 on the day because that's all we could do. It wasn't actually 3-5-2 because I think we ended up with a centre half at right wing back, and it will always be a struggle. But what we did have, we had two really good forwards. We had Mark Bellingham, and we had Luke Corbett. So we were always going to score goals. So I think I just went a bit more attacking in the early days, thinking, right, we're not going to keep too many clean sheets. So we sort of went 3-4-1-2, and we managed to get a 2-2. And I'll always remember it, yeah, because it was so hectic. You can imagine it was like Thursday night, Friday morning, Friday afternoon, Friday night, Saturday morning, trying to get things done. And a great following there as well. So now, I think that game and probably the first home game, then, which happens to be the Blues in the Senior Cup. Yeah, I can still remember a lot of that, really. Lots of other periods, at times. Obviously, I can't, but I think just probably that first week was so much going on. It's still there. Yeah.
It's amazing how those, you know, certain memories do always stick in your mind. Because I was already aware of you before you took up the Leamington job, because you probably don't notice it, but I was the media officer at Hayes and Yedding, or Yedding, back in 2004.
Yeah, of course,
you were the manager at Howzo in town, and you got into the first round of the FA Cup for a number of years, wasn't it? So it was quite a big...
That's right. I mean, it was another great day. It was DJ Campbell got the winner.
He did. It's a great game, tough old game, back at the Warren in those days.
You were flying at the time, weren't you, Hayes and Yedding at that point.
We were. The weird thing that sticks in my mind is that we'd beaten, in the fourth qualifying round, we'd beaten Bognor Regis Town. And back in the days, it was when it was a Saturday evening draw. So we're then in the team, we've just beaten them, knocked them out of the FA Cup. And we're all standing in their bar waiting to see the draw. And Hal's Owen Town comes out. And it's a bit sort of, ooh, who are they? And yeah. I remember then getting back from Bognor back to home, and then using the limited internet that we had back then, and sort of doing as much research as I could about yourself, about the club, and then been a little bit worried because we were flying, but you know, you were known for being a very solid team, and on the day gave us a great
and
game.
It's a similar story because again, you remember good times, don't you? And Howells having gone to Bricktown up north, and we'd actually won 4-1 on the day. And played really well. And I think the most exciting thing about when you can win a game, we probably brought 500 fans up there. It was a great day. But the draw, like you say, was live at 6 o'clock. Mm. So, similar to you, we stopped in Brigg. All the fans stopped there. And we all watched the draw together. And because Hayes and Yedding came out, and everyone was looking around at each game, who were they? And, you know, it's probably similar to what you were doing. But it was a good idea. It's great when you win a game. And you've got the draw to look for. You're rushing out the shower to get into the bar to listen to the draw. It was great. The goal scorers on that day, the four at Brigg, were St. Steve Pope, Jimmy Harhalf, Jason Moore, and Richard Burgess. There you go.
Just proving that the management doesn't decrease the number of brain cells that you have.
Good days. I think you remember the good days. Don't
you? You do remember. But, I mean, you'd obviously had success before Howzone as well at Solihull, and then after Howzone, a good spell at Russell Olympic. But how did you come by the Leamington job? You said that were you in the offing? Were you looking for to get a new job and get back in?
Yeah,
in the scene?
I think Howzone, the Leamington job is the only job I've ever applied for, and it was basically that I'd been at Solihull a long time, and a great time at Solihull, fantastic Solihull Borough then. Moving on quickly, spent except 3 odd years at Howzone, good club Howzone. Rushall again, the Allen family, great. I did about 2.5 years at Rushall, and I think we'd lost in the play. I think I've probably done as much as I could, really. And then I was sort of little bit unsure, I was doing a bit of coaching here and watching a few games for different things. And when it came up, Leamington was always one of them clubs that, because it was sort of the history of it, and when it was the rebirth, it was coming through the leagues, you know, it was in the area, if you where I was, you'd always keep an eye. I'd been over a few times and watched it sort of grow and thought, God, this club's whatever. But then obviously it did ever so well to get to step three, and obviously found it difficult to step three. So obviously, yeah, that's right. And I think, to be fair, in the end, that was it. Applied for it, went through the process, and managed to get the job. And as they say, the rest, they say, is history.
And quite a bit of history as well. I mean, I mentioned that the highs and lows in that intro, but the club have always stuck by you, and the fans they seem a great loyalty to you as a manager. And what's great to see as well is that. Pretty much all of the board and those behind the scenes that played a hand in appointing you back then are still the same ones there. And I think that probably says as much about you still being there as your successes on the field.
Yeah, it's got a lot of stability, yeah. I mean, it was difficult when I first came in because obviously I think there was a lot of people disappointed with the previous manager. Must have been, probably 10 years. There was a bit of that to start with, but, you gradually, whatever. And, listen, what I probably would say is probably... I seen the potential, probably having a little bit more experience as player and manager than probably the people up there. I could see where Leamington could go. I could see the crowds. I could, the structure. It was an attractive place to manage, to attract players. And probably as being bluntly honest, as a manager, a club and a board, I think we've all sort of grew together really. And you have to, if I look back at where we were 12 years ago and I think about all the big, what was the, and I look at us now, and that's basically what's happened. But listen, there's no road, there's no journey you go on that's got a lovely red carpet on it, nice flat velvety road. There's always going to be bumps. I mean, we've had a few bumps, but there's certainly been more, there's been more sort of coming down the hill than up it. We've had some good times and, some great memories and like you say, it's stability. There's no doubt about that. The stability off the pitch, the management side, and with the players as well. We've got that many in my time. There's that many players that have played 250, 300 games for the club. Having that structure is very important. I mean, if you look at us now, you look at the hardcore of the team, sort of, you look at players who've been around with us now on the journey a bit, Steph Morley, Jack Lyne, Joe Clark, you know, Junior English, Gitto. Some of them play 32, 33, 34. Some of them play 152, Jack Edwards, 300 games for the club. And Junior English, you know, 35, 36, a fantastic non-league player that's never played lower than this level, you know. And what happens with them then? They help shape the younger players that come into the football club. So when this summer, when there's a Dan Turner coming in, there's a Kelsey Mooney coming in, and Joe Parker arrives at the football club, another Carl Morrison comes in, them younger players come in and see these experienced non-league players, they see what we do, and you sort of shape them into what you've got, because there's no doubt about it that, you know, when we've won the Southern Premier or where we are now, it's not because we've got, you know, we haven't been able to go and buy it and just buy it off the shelf. We've had to build it every time. And listen, we're in a better position than what we were, but, and then you just try and shape the squad, shape the players, and try and get a real good bonding and spirit there, as well as the quality and everything else that you need. And I just think, whichever club I've ran, I've always tried to think that people who support the football club or run the football feel connected with it. Mm. They feel connected with the changing room and the players. And I think that's important in non-league football. I get it at certain levels, you can't do it. But I think where we are, as a part-time football club, I think that connection between the manager, the players, the supporters, the board and everyone, you know, it's not isolated. And everybody feels part of the journey. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, and I think that's obvious from the messages of support that I've seen going out this last week for you as well and the club. And yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned about you saw the vision, the potential project that the managers always talk about when they take on a new job. But you know, off the field, I know the ground and the club has developed dramatically in those last 12 years. And you mentioned there about, you know, building the team and that sort of thing. But has your role had to change as well, with the way you manage this new generation of players?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, because it's my management style. I'm trying to think when it first. It's 20 years probably now. You know, what am I talking about? It's 28. So it's 23, 24 years since I first started managing the first team. And listen, things have changed, and we have generations have changed, and And yeah, but, you know, I think because I've sort of played in an era of coached, managed in, you know, sort of the 80s and 90s, say, you know, with all that, what it was like then, and I'm sort of still going now, but there was also a lot of good things in them days mm-hmm. that I've probably still got with me now, you see. So I think there was a lot more door slamming and ranting and raving, and it wasn't as structured. No matter who you work with or, you know, what change rooms you were in, it was a bit more heart on the sleeve kind of thing everywhere you went. But there was always a great, you know, football back in the day was all about the group, and there wasn't so much, you know, players swapping around. You'd be there all season. And that's gone a little bit, really. So I think I try them principles. I try in the teams I've got now. I still try to say, you know, this is very important. This ingredient, mm-hmm. you know, and we have to. And I try and instill that into the group in terms of little things that we do to make sure that's important. I try and always, and to be fair, I try and manage the players. They all need. You've heard it before. They all need managing differently, mm-hmm. and that's how we are. And you know, I've never really been a shouter and bawler. I've been in change rooms when people, managers, coach, and I've looked at it the way up. But I think there's ways of managing where, you know, people know who's in charge or whatever, but you've got to try and run the changing room that you gain respect, but, you know, you've got to be constructive. We've got players that range from 19 to 36, and they're all different people. They're all on different journeys. They've all got different circumstances, and I think sometimes as a manager, you've got to realise that and take that into account. And that's what I do. And you try and create, you know, like you say, you just try and create a good working environment where players can enjoy coming to training, enjoy being involved in the football club, respect it, and if we do that, then, you know, then hopefully, you know, hand in glove, things will work out for us.
Yeah, you mentioned that the number of years you've been managing there, but your playing career ended early through injury. But did you always think that management might be a long term option for you, even when you were a player?
Yeah, listen, it was a team. You know, it was always going to be the way. I was probably coaching from seven. So you see a lot more of it now. You know, there's lots of young lads coaching now, but I was probably a bit of a freak then because I was, you know, 15, 16, which, you know, was sort of, you know, back in the mid 80s. That was me. You know, so I always prefer. It was a journey. Listen, nobody would have paid me too much back in the day. So listen, two knee ops, I'm thinking, you know, I prefer the, and that's the journey I went on. And you know, it's quite risky, I suppose, really. But yeah, it's worked out all right. And you know, coaching, assistant manager, worked with some great people. And, bit by bit, it shapes you, doesn't it? And you take on board things, you look at things, work with some good players as well. Even now, I still use players, you know, in terms of your recruitment, you know, which is very important. You're limited what you can do in terms of information on players, but you speak to players, good honest players who play with players. They'll give you a good idea of what you're signing or what you could be signing and guide you in directions. And definitely that scenario, yeah.
And any advice for young managers maybe looking to take it up, maybe their first job, or perhaps even young managers have had a good start and then maybe ended up getting sacked or something and looking to get back in? You know, is everybody unique?
I suppose, to be fair, I was young, so, no, I went and worked at, you know, my first manager job was the Interlink. I was about 27, 28, so I was in a lovely site in there at Solihull Borough back in the day. It was a big club back in the day. And but I came out of the, you know, I'd done a couple of years in reserves and that, and I thought, well, I was playing, managing, coaching, whatever. And then I missed first time football. So, you know, it went in, and listen, you do need a couple of lucky breaks here and there. But I think people that do things properly and work hard, you know, hard work does tend to reward, and your name soon gets around. And all I've ever done is try and, again, do things properly, treat people correctly, work hard. You've got to make tough decisions, that's it. But you try and do it the right way. I've been sacked, which is not nice. But a director of football at Howells, everything, called Colin Brooks. He's well known around here. And I remember him ringing me up and saying to me, I'll never forget the phone call, was sort of, listen, you'll be better for this. And, you know, when you're 36, 37, I'm thinking, better for this, you know, because it was a good job I was having, to be fair. There was a lot of potential there. But I did. And I probably, when I went into Rushall, I was a bit more, maybe a little bit more streetwise with it all. And probably all the experiences I've had at clubs, and well, the difficult ones and the good ones, have gradually probably helped me develop into, you know, being able to make Leamington better and help, you know, especially help probably some of the younger players that we've managed to, you know, we've managed to give them a little bit of a polish and shape them a little bit. And we've managed to move them back into the full-time football, which is something that I've really put a lot of time into recently because it's very fulfilling.
Yeah, and yeah. You know, let's talk about the here and now. I mean, a massive game coming up as well. You're there in the playoffs. What are you, fourth in the table? You've got Chorley were third. Your next game up. Very few would turn it down, promotion or the opportunity. But, you know, with the club, you've taken them so far as it is. Could the club compete at the highest tier of non-league football?
I think, listen, we've got to be realistic a little bit. Listen, we're, you know, as usual, we're sort of favourites to get down again, as we are most years. So, or some Blythe, I think. So, listen, we're enjoying the moment, right? I was disappointed last year because we put a good side together last year and we probably played 20 games, did really well, and no one got to see it, and we were doing well in the league. And because we've had some tough years in this division, and I think because of all the tough years we've had, Tim, it's great, like last year and now even carrying it on to this year, that we're actually at the right end of the table. We're competing. We had some fantastic games, you know, and you know, already the teams we've beat at home, oh, yeah, like York, Gateshead, Boston, Spennymoor, and it's great. But listen, we've got a small squad. This division is very unforgiving. But you know something, while we're on this run, we're going to try and keep going as long as we can. We're going to try and stay in the pack as long as we can. We're going to try and stop in the right half of the table. And listen, who knows? Who knows? And, yeah. Could Leamington Football Club go in? Of course they can. They'd have to, wouldn't they? Mm. You know, at the end of the day. But the reality is, listen, we've always gone along and sort of said, look, let's get to 40, 45 points. Let's make sure. Being at this level is great for us, because there's a lot bigger clubs than Leamington at step three, even in our area. But I think because we've managed the club correctly, and we've been cute on and off the pitch, we've been able to sustain this level of football, and that's what we want to do. But we're all allowed to dream, ain't we? So, and the players are in a good place at the moment. Our recruitment's been good again. We've managed to pick up three or four really good young players again who are really thriving at the level. And, if the players keep performing like they are at the moment, who knows where we might end up.
Who knows where you might end up? And 12 years ago, if when you were frantically looking for centre backs on that Thursday afternoon, who knew we'd be here? Paul, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. But we could talk.
The true story about Gary Knight as well. He didn't have a pair of boots. He threw his boots away. So we have to get him some boots for Cambridge City.
You don't get these sort of stories at the top level. This is why we all love non-league. Best of luck at the weekend, Paul. We look forward to speaking to you again in another 12 years' time.
Great to speak to you soon. Thank you ever so much. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
So let's round off this week's news. Time to head on over once again to Non-League Paper Towers. And it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Senior writer there, David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. It's been a busier week for me and a busier week for you, I guess. We had the FA Cup. That first round, not so many cup sets as we'd hoped, but St Albans' result against Forest Green, one that will go down in the annals of those non-league cup sets, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. That was sort of the big shock, or I suppose big result of the weekend, really. It was a difficult Saturday for non-league teams. We had Buxton beating York and Kidderminster beating Grimsby, but apart from that, there was little to choose from, really, out of the shocks. But then that one came along on Sunday. Obviously, great pick for the TV cameras as well, of course, getting that one on sort of prime time Sunday night TV. So really, really good game there. Seemed like it was a good occasion as well. 4,000 sell out there at Clarence Park. So really good upset for St Albans, although I suppose I'll probably say now they weren't rewarded with the tie lead of lights with now heading to Boreham Wood in the second round.
One of the bonuses there, it has been selected for one of the TV games hopefully that can be a showcase for non-league football, but it's just convincing people that they need to watch it before they switch off, I guess. That's always the complicated one, isn't it? If people don't know about non-league, are they going to be interested to watch an all non-league tie? It would be great if they can, because then they'll see how wonderful non-league is. But it's an odd one.
Yeah, I think we've said before, really, the free-to-air TV on ITV and BBC is a great advert for non-league and for these clubs. I suppose the attraction of Boreham Wood and St Albans, I imagine the third round draw will be after that game. So, it's a big game for those two clubs. Of course, it doesn't really sort of have the shock factor as such of playing a football league side, but it can't be understated how important that game will be for those two clubs. It's not quite sort of the tie people will be looking forward to sort of tuning in for, I suppose. But, it's nice for them as non-league clubs to be on TV, have that last game of the weekend and obviously bringing in a really decent figure for both clubs in terms of the finances as well. So, that will still be a good occasion for those clubs, and there'll be a decent crowd there as well.
Yeah, and I guess some of those people that wouldn't normally tune on for a non-league game may be swayed by the replays that we've got coming ahead in the coming week. On Tuesday, we've got Solihull Moors at Wigan Athletic. That's another one on, I think that's ITV4, that one. And then on Wednesday, live on BBC Two, we've got the replay of Stockport County Bolton Wanderers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, two sort of really good replay, interesting replays coming there. So, that's certainly the sort of one I imagine people will be tuning in for. There's obviously other replays involving non-league clubs, Gateshead against Altrincham and Notts County playing Rochdale. And that Gateshead-Altrincham one, you know, has a really good prize of a home game against Charlton on the Friday night, and that one's on ITV as well. So, yeah, lots to play for in those replays. Expecting a big crowd of that Stockport game. They took 5,000 to Bolton on Sunday. That should be a sellout, I imagine, there. Which somewhat makes up, I suppose, for last year when they played West Ham, but it was in front of no one. So, you know, that would be a really great occasion there on Wednesday.
Yeah, and so we've had lots of FA Cup excitement this week. There'll be some more next week, obviously, with those replays. But this weekend, certainly at steps 3 and 4, the clubs that are still there, it's all about the FA Trophy. And £3,000 for the winners is an amount not to be sniffed at, as well as a chance then to meet a step 2 side in the next round.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't sort of understate really sort of that sort of money from winning a game of football for non-league clubs. It's certainly, you know, a competition that's very prestigious in non-league, of course, and plenty of clubs will want success in that. I think after Hornchurch won the competition last year, I think it, you know, does give those clubs at step 3 and lower down hope that they can go far in the competition and replicate something like that. So yeah, they'll very much be a competitive mentality, and you know, no team taking that game on Saturday lightly, like you sometimes see in the early rounds of the FA Cup from teams higher up. You know, they'll be going all out to win those games. Looking forward to some trophy action this weekend.
Yeah, and we of course have to talk about the managerial merry-go-round every week. I guess there's a number of departures. So if you're an out-of-work manager at the moment, do you think, is that a regular sort of Monday morning job? You just sort of update your CV and then you have a look around. There does seem to be a number of vacancies around or sort of a lot of caretaker positions at the moment across the steps, really.
Yeah, that's right. It's sort of got a little bit crazy almost sort of this week. East Thurrock changed their manager, Grantham, Farsley have a new appointment, Basildon changed. There's rumours Andy Woodman at Bromley's on his way to Hartlepool as well. It always seems to go off. It's always kind of the end of October, sort of early November really, when I suppose clubs are at that 10, 11, 12 sort of game mark and sort of the future of a season is starting to be laid out really by what's gone before it, and clubs are weighing up their options whether to make a change, knowing that they'll still have enough time to turn things around. You know, I think that's probably what Stockport have hoped, appointing Dave Channer last week with a lot of time to go in the season. So yeah, it's all gone a little bit mad. You sort of know it's bad when we're struggling to get everything in the paper, really. We're running out of space even by Thursday afternoon. So yeah, certainly lots to get in the paper on Sunday, and we're doing our best to get it all in.
You touched upon the Andy Woodman Bromley situation. We're recording this Thursday evening, and as we effectively, as we're speaking, Bromley have issued a statement saying that although there's plenty of speculation that Andy Woodman's going to Hartlepool United, they can confirm that no official approach has been made. And we talk about managers and the difficulties that they have week in, week out. And yeah, well, I've got to, again, ring the bell and sound the horns for you guys there at the non-league paper, because there's an, in the modern world, social media is a bit different, and there's plenty of journalists that have gone out there already to say, yeah, Hartlepool have appointed him, he's on his way, he's moved into the house next door, and everything like that. Old school journalists, maybe, people like to call us, but we have to deal with facts, don't we? That's a difficult situation sometimes as a journalist, and it's easy to grab some headlines by saying that certain things have happened, but if they haven't, you and I find it difficult to report on that.
Yeah, interesting sort of Bromley have come out with that, because it certainly seemed like reports were strong about Andy Woodman going to Hartlepool. Yeah, things out there saying that a deal had been agreed, etc. But yeah, that's a pretty strong statement from Bromley saying sort of no formal approaches has been made for him. So yeah, clearly, you know, as things stand, he's staying. But yeah, I'm not sort of quite sure obviously what's happened there.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that he wouldn't go given the opportunity and that. But it's just difficult to. I think sometimes living in a different era as training as a journalist, we have to deal with facts, and sometimes we get criticised because we're not necessarily the first ones out there. But what we do like to report is the truth.
Yeah, of course, and it's obviously very important to do that. Like I say, not really sure wherever those things have come from, how they've come about. So I guess Bromley have cleared that up for now, and we'll wait and see what happens. Who knows? Maybe by 9 o'clock tonight, it'll
be different.
That's sort of sometimes the way football works, isn't it? Changes by the hour sometimes, but we'll see.
Well, that's it. In the modern era, a formal approach can be done over WhatsApp, I'm sure, within a matter of seconds. So if that was the follow-up that needed to be done, I'm sure it's been done. One other managerial appointment, which I thought was an exciting one, actually. Danny Scopes going into Aveley.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I spoke to Danny earlier in the week. He's very excited about going in there. Obviously, was at Concord Rangers last season, took them to the FA Trophy final, and has sort of been waiting patiently for his next job. Obviously, it's a couple of leagues down from where Concord are in National League South, but I think with the plans Aveley have there, it's a club that very much sort of wants to move forward. And, you know, I think they're with the manager there, Danny Scopes. You know, they've got someone who knows how to build an identity, build a DNA like he helped do in the early days at Concord with the Cowleys, and then again when he returned there. So, I think they've made a decent appointment there. You know, I was surprised Keith Rowland moved on. I didn't see that coming. It's not like they've had a bad start to their league campaign. But I guess, you know, they felt with Danny Scopes available, it was probably an opportunity at that time they couldn't turn down. So, a good appointment for them. And, yeah, we'll see how they go.
Yeah, and it's another one of those appointments where we're talking about managers coming in, and Aveley are fourth in that Isthmian League North Division. We're very competitive. We've spoken already with Brad Wellman at Canvey Island, at top of that division this season. But normally as a manager coming into a new project, you're struggling down the bottom and maybe fighting off relegation. But it does seem to be a number of opportunities this season in particular where managers can come in at and they've already got a squad that's performing very well in their division.
Yeah, that's right. There was also Jim Cooper moving on at Grays, wasn't there? Obviously, the Buxton change recently. Also, Curzon Ashton in National League North. Yeah, it's odd, really, that you know you'd go into a job and be in a good situation, really. But yeah, it sort of almost seems like it's happened quite a lot this season for varying reasons. I guess those managers sort of going into those jobs are pretty lucky, really, that, you know, in essence, they don't have to change too much or start bringing a load of players in to force change either. So, an interesting one. And you've got to say maybe, some of those managers who have been out of work maybe for a long time through the COVID break deserve that little bit of good fortune.
Yeah. We mentioned FA Trophy. I'm sure there'll be plenty of report about the FA Cup. What else can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, loads in there this weekend, of course. Like we said, we've got FA Trophy all covered coming up with that, and obviously National League and National League North and all the other bits and pieces at steps 4, 5 and 6. We've got a lot of FA Cup reaction. I've spoken to goalkeeper Ethan Ross at Stockport, Russ Penn at Kidderminster. As mentioned, Danny Scopes going in at Averley. Also, Rod Stringer, who's having a really good time at Brentwood Town, won his first 6 games in charge there. Of course, the old Chelmsford City manager, and he's one of those managers, as I just said, who's sort of had to bide his time through the pandemic for an opportunity. But he's taken that one and certainly taken it with both hands and going really well. Also spoke to Buxton about their upset of York last weekend, and they've got a home tie against Morecambe, which is a decent one, and also going to be part of that TV coverage on the second round weekend, and plenty more. Adam Virgo comes back with his column on the latest issues in the National League, and like I said, all the manager changes and all the other bits and pieces. So yeah, really. Another packed edition this weekend. Looking forward to this game, this weekend's action as well.
Yeah, and so always a good reason, always the reason to get up on a Sunday morning is to get hold of your non-league paper. I fear the weather may be changing this weekend, so I'd suggest to get out early, make sure grab a coffee, and take it all in, enjoy it. David Richardson, thank you once again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
Cheers, Tim.
That is it then for this week. Thank you to all of my guests and, as ever, for everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, and myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. As ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, thank you, and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.